Morning, everyone. It's wonderful to be back. Will you please pray with me, O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother,
Beloved Jesus Christ,
Blessed Master,
Saints and Sages of all religions,
I bow to all of you.
Free my life from all obstacles,
and give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only King.
Reigning on a throne of my consciousness. Next couple of months, I'll actually be able to unpack my suitcase for a while, so that'll be nice. Raul brought me this book on the principle of Upanishads, sacred wisdom, and I opened it up. I thought it was very appropriate to where the marker was. The iron fetters that bind the heart are shattered by the acts of discrimination. All doubts are resolved. Deeds and their effects die when he or she sees through the laws of cause and effect. In the supreme golden sheath rests Brahman, free from passions, indivisible, that is, pure light of lights, the self of self-knowledge, consciousness, reality, love. In the supreme golden sheath rests Brahman. Free from passions, indivisible, that is pure, light of lights, the self of self-knowledge, consciousness, reality, love. The sun does not shine there, nor the moon, the stars, the lightning flash, nor does the fire blaze. When Brahman shines, the all shines by that, by this light all is lit. The eternal Brahman is therefore behind, right, left, above, below. That alone is all this. What is sheer perfection. And from Master's commentary on the Gita, this is chapter 8, verses 12 through 18. I will tell you of that which is to be known, because such knowledge bestows immortality. Hear about the beginningless Supreme Spirit, he who is spoken of as neither existent, sat, nor non-existent, asat. He dwells in the world, enveloping all, everywhere. His hands and feet present on all sides, his eyes and ears, his mouths and heads, shining in all the sense faculties, yet transcending the senses, unattached to creation, yet the mainstay of all, free from the gunas, the modes of nature, yet the enjoyer of them. He is within and without all that exists, the animate and the inanimate. Near he is, and far, imperceptible because of his subtlety. He, the indivisible one, appears as countless beings. He maintains and destroys those forms that creates them anew. The light of all lights, beyond darkness, knowledge itself, which that which is to be known, the goal of all learning. He is seated in the hearts of all. I have briefly described the field, the nature of wisdom, and the object of wisdom. Understanding these, my devotee enters my being. I thought it was interesting in this that I had already selected from Master was the light of all lights. It's also in the Upanishads that was marked here that Raul gave me this morning. This is the way it goes oftentimes. I realize that when there's a new journal out in the front, if you'd like to pick one up, oftentimes, in fact, I think every time, when I have written for something of the dear friends, and then later on, we select something from Mother's writings or her speaking, the transcriptions of her speaking. And what I have written corresponds exactly to what she's talking about, sometimes using the same words, and yet I haven't known what writing we're going to be selecting of hers until usually after I've written the dear friends. So it's tremendous the way that these things operate together. When we attune our minds, our hearts, and our souls to the divine rhythm of this universe, we put ourselves into harmony with all that is good, all that is part of that light of lights. It is difficult for the mind to grasp what is beyond this creation, an eternal existence without form, without name, without subject or object. In fact, the mind operates by role of subject and object, so it's very difficult, if not impossible, for the mind to really conceive that. You can try, but you remain eternally the observer of what it is that you're trying to imagine. And therefore, you can't really comprehend this light of lights. Today, we honor and mark the celebration of Father's Day. And in the cosmology of the eternal religion is the three aspects of God. This is both reflected within Hinduism as well as in Christianity. In fact, we find so many parallels that we think there must be a correspondence between the two. In fact, at the time of Jesus, travel between the Middle East and India was very frequent. The Romans went there frequently. They went for spices and other precious things that they couldn't grow or they couldn't find in their own countries. And so we know that. And we know that there's been a lot of cross-pollination within the ancient religions and even within modern religions. So much of what we take for granted around Easter or Christmas are actually incorporations of different religious ideals that are not other than Christian. The Easter egg and the Easter bunny, Father Christmas, the Christmas tree, all of these things were predating Christianity. And yet we have incorporated them into a Christian tradition. And the same was true in the ancient Israelites, that many of the myths and many of the stories that were told by Moses and other of the ancient fathers were pre-existent in Babylonia and in India. And it's not to take away anything from any particular religion. It's just to say that, number one, these truths have been shared on a very deep level for many different religions, many different traditions and cultures and parts of the world. And even a greater thing is this, and that is that there is a universal subconscious mind in which we all share. And these symbols, these ideas, keep popping up. They keep coming up from time to time. They may wear a slightly different garb of clothing. Certainly the language and the words can change. But when you look at the dynamics and when you look at the underlying symbology and principles, they are the same. Now, not everything is the same. And each religion brings with it a particular kind of point of view, a particular essence to it, an expression of truth that is particular to that religion. We have to say that with Moses came the law, and with Jesus came a new law, the law of love. And with each prophet, there comes a particular expression, an emphasis on how to attain to the divinity. When the Buddha gained his realization, he was not in favor of worshiping different kinds of images, and as he found in Hinduism, he wanted to go directly to the state of realization. So he bypassed any sorts of symbols. But this isn't to say that symbols are not important. The Buddha would have been the one who had been most abhorred by the fact that there are so many millions of statues of Buddha today. He would have thought this was sacrilege and going directly against the kind of thing that he was teaching. And yet you have to recognize the human mind. The human mind wants something to grasp onto. And so these different images of divine forms have come down through time. And if you don't have any particular image at all, then you will create something of beauty, something of an uplifting nature, whether it's something in nature or something that has been created by man, in order to draw the mind into a proper frame of mind. We do that in our meditation. We sit down to meditation, and if we have built for ourselves a area where we meditate, or what in India would be called a puja room, a place of worship, then perhaps we have an altar, perhaps we have some fresh flowers and a candle and incense on it. Perhaps there are some pictures of different saints and spiritual masters. And as we visit that space, that place within the meditation room, it begins to build a vibration. It begins to build a power. And at first we invest ourselves in terms of meditating, of spending our time in this deepened meditation state. And this builds a vibration there so that it begins to support you as well as others. This vibration begins to build in that area. If you've created a room, if you've created a part of a room in order to have this, if you have a meditation blanket, if you have meditation beads, these things all begin to take on the higher vibration that you experience when you're meditating. You see, everything is made up of vibration, ultimately. When we look at this world, it appears very solid to us. It appears to be a physical manifestation. But we know through metaphysics first, and now physics has discovered that everything is made up of energy and of light. And the energy vibrates at different levels, and so that you have something of a faster vibration, and it takes on a more something like air or atmosphere, something where the atoms are spread out further. And then you have something more dense, like lead. And on it goes, and everything goes up and down the scale from denser vibration to higher vibration. When you get into consciousness, you get into even more refined vibration. And as you sensitize yourself to this vibration, you begin to feel the variations that go on throughout this world, not only in the material world, but what we would call the astral or the energetic world. And when you meet somebody, if you have sensitized yourself in this way, you can get a feeling, you can get a sense for that individual. They carry a vibration with them, as is their habit. And you may get either a positive or a negative vibration. Now, we have to be careful here, because we also carry a vibration. And our vibration will color and change our outlook on how we see this world. If somebody is very depressed And you can literally see a dark cloud around that individual. And when they look out through their two eyes, they see a depressed world. They look out and they see everything that supports them, and feeling that this world is a negative place, is a bad place, is a distrustful place. Somebody who is imbued with positive vibration looks out through these two eyes and they see hopefulness. They see light. They see upliftment. And from a human standpoint, we should always cultivate the positive thoughts. Now, this is not to mean that we live in a fairy tale land where we don't see what the issues or the problems are, the difficulties that people are encountering. We see them, but we see them with new eyes. We see them with the eyes that everything has come from this light of lights. This light of lights is the supreme being of the supreme consciousness. Now, because we are human beings, we oftentimes like to picture God as a human being. We see him perhaps as wearing a long beard and long hair with a kindly face. And this is all right. Sri Yukteswar said in the astral realms where he now serves as a guru or a savior, that at the time of graduation, what we call death, they call graduation. They're moving up in the world, so to speak. They're moving from the higher astral realms into the higher causal realms. And they see it as a time of celebration, a time that somebody is moving from one grade to a higher grade. And Sri Yukteswar said at that time that God will manifest in whatever favorite forms the individual has conceived God from. And you see, at that point, for God, it's a thing of a play. It's a thing of delight. It's a thing of expression. And isn't it wonderful to think that God can manifest in whatever form we hold near and dear? If we hold Jesus dear above all other beings, then God would equally manifest as Jesus as if we beheld Rama or Krishna or Ganesha or Buddha or Lao Tzu or any of the great ones down through time. That the divine can manifest as anything as it chooses. And it obviously delights in its creation. The creation is a manifestation of ananda, of joy, of bliss. How far we have come from that conception that this creation is a manifestation of bliss. Just think of how you entertain this world day to day. Do you see it as a manifestation of bliss? Or do you only see the problems? Do you only see the difficulties? Do you only see the things that you don't like and then go around complaining about it and wondering why the world is in such a terrible state? The world is as it is because God has given us all free will. And we can choose. We can choose. I was recently listening to a scientist, and he didn't quote the study, so I can't tell you where it came from. But he is saying that it was a reliable study, and they were doing study on genetics. And they were observing the genetics of certain cells, and they had people around it thinking different thoughts. They had people going into states of meditation or thinking thoughts of happiness, and it actually changed some of the genetics of that material. Now, that really sounds fantastic. And I don't know if it's true or not, but I can easily believe that it is if you have a powerful enough imagination. Now, imagination is oftentimes disparaged, but imagination merely means our ability to image. And it doesn't have to be make-believe. The more we attune ourselves to truth and reality through our ability to image in our mind, the more powerful becomes this imaging faculty. And when you are able to create a positive and firm image of yourself and the world around you, it changes this world. It changes you. Norman Cousins, in his wonderful book, talked about laughter therapy. And twice he cured himself of what were said to be incurable diseases through laughter, through joy, through positive thinking. He rented movies that made him laugh. He surrounded himself with people that were positive. And as a result, while he is in the hospital, everybody started gathering around. All the other patients, they are attracted by this, you see. They heard him laughing. They heard the movies. They wanted some of that. So they all started coming around in their wheelchairs and on their crutches and in every condition you can imagine. And the hospital, believe it or not, asked him to leave because he is disrupting their duties. They're disrupting how things are going, you see. Well, how are things going? You look at the amount of problems that exist within hospitals and how people are treated and the amount of infections that get distributed around, and are they really places to get well? Are they really places to heal? And oftentimes, too many times, you would have to say they are definitely not. So our ability to align ourselves and attune ourselves with the divine vibration, the highest vibration, is absolutely essential in our being able to ascend up the spinal stairway. You see, we can be saying that we follow a spiritual path. We can be saying that we are doing, and we can be trying to meditate, but really, and we know the truth of it, our mind keeps on going back to the old habit nature of the mind, and it goes back to negativity. And if we are to really track our thoughts and see what it is that we're really thinking and doing, we'll find out that we're really not following a spiritual path. Mother Krishnabai oftentimes talked about learning the ABCs. You have to learn the ABCs first. And she would notice that people would come to the ashram, and at first they are very enthusiastic. They are looking forward to it a great deal. And if they stayed for very long, the first thing you knew, they started complaining. The food's not just right. The accommodations aren't just right. And the list would go on and on and on. And sometimes they'd hear about it. And here they were, doing the very best they could with the conditions and the money and everything else that they had. They did the best that they could to accommodate everybody, but people had their complaints. And here, Mataji was doing everything in her power to make the way easy and straight so that when people came to see Papa, that all they had to do was just focus on Papa. You see, she didn't have it that way. When she started coming to see Papa, people used to criticize her. She was a widow, and in India, there is some very strict do's and don'ts for widows, and widows really weren't to go out and to be seen all that much. It was really a terrible thing at the time. And she would go to the ashram every day. Well, the tongues would wag, and people would be talking about her and casting aspersions on her. What was she doing out there, and why was she going every single day, and why wasn't she staying home? And then Papa told her, you serve everybody as you would serve me. You see, when she first went out to the ashram, instead of finding fault, if she saw a dirty floor, she picked up a broom and started sweeping. If she saw something that needed to be done, she just started doing it. Papa said, you start serving everybody as you serve me. So she would just show up at people's homes and say, can I help you? Can I help you clean your home? Can I help you cook? Can I help you do your things? You're a busy person. You've got all these children. And so she would spend her days cleaning house, all the time chanting Ram Nam, all the time singing to God and chanting to God. And as a result, she experienced very rapid progress. But you know, when she finally came to the ashram to live, she was moved far away against her own wishes. She told her children she was going back to the ashram. She couldn't guarantee what kind of life they would have, but that she wishes that they would come with her. She had two sons, and neither one chose to come. They thought it might be kind of a tough thing. And they had comfortable circumstances they were, where they were living with relatives, so they chose not to. And she walked hundreds of miles to get there without food, just with one change of clothing. And she left. And when she showed up at the ashram, she was faint with hunger and exhaustion. And she said, "Papa, I'm here. I can't imagine being anyplace else." And Papa said, "This home is yours." You see how big and loving Papa's heart was. And yet he knew that there would be criticism because she would be living there at the ashram. And the one assistant that Papa had, when Mataji came back, he moved out. And so it's just Papa and Mataji. Well, you can imagine the kind of scandal. I mean, there are many, many scandals that we know about today. Here, there is no need for any rumor or innuendo, but there it went. And out it went. And one night they were attacked. And as a result, they picked up and they moved the ashram. And it's to where it is now. So they really had a difficult time in a human sense. They really suffered, and Mataji was extremely hurt in this attack that they had. Her back was badly bent, and it never operated correctly after that. During the day, she worked from early morning till late at night. She'd have to lay down during the day because her back would begin spasming so badly. And so she really went through it. She gave everything in order to receive everything, in order to receive this light of lights. And yet when people came to the ashram, they would complain because the food wasn't just right. Can you imagine? After what she went through. And so they make everything possible so that you can put your mind, your heart, your soul all upon God. There's a man at the ashram who used to meditate, and he is saying he's going into samadhi. But as soon as the dinner bell would ring, he'd get up and he'd go right in with everybody else. And Papa observed this. And he said, "No way is he in samadhi. Not when he's doing like that." So you have to be real with yourself. You have to be rigorous. You have to be a spiritual scientist. How are you doing? Do you assess yourself every single day? How did I do at keeping my mind on God, on serving God, on loving God, on stilling the mind and absorbing myself into God consciousness? How did I do? Without this honest self-evaluation, we will get nowhere because we'll continue. You have to understand your default is your human ego. And if you're not making spiritual effort, if you're not doing your sadhana, you're not going anywhere. You're just repeating the mistakes of the past. Your mind will automatically go back to ego consciousness. So this has to be what changes, is that first you have to be honest, dead honest with yourself. If you want to make progress, if you want to have realization, then you've got to be honest with yourself and you've got to put in the effort. We had a wonderful meditation yesterday. It was our Silent Saturday. We had the 6 hours of silence and meditation. And it's a wonderful time. It's a wonderful time. And I know that there are people who have times of struggle when they come. And there are people who are afraid when they come. Will I be able to do it? But we always give an escape valve at the top of the hour. You can always leave if it's not going well for you. But there's nothing that replaces spending more time in meditation, letting the mind and the body settle down. It takes time. Now, if we had a powerful concentration, we would be able to direct the mind and change it right now. One time, somebody wanted to take a picture of Master. And Master said, "Just a moment. I want to be in Nirvikalpa Samadhi when I have this picture taken." And just as instantly as that, he said, "All right, you can take it now." Even while he is talking, even while he is doing, he shifted himself and lifted himself up into the highest states of consciousness. You can see it in his pictures. You can see what a beautiful man he was. You can see the luster in his eyes, how deep his eyes are, how open his expression is. We are greatly privileged to have had such a great God-man come and make a dispensation for all of us who practice Kriya Yoga, for all of us who are on the spiritual path. He has influenced so many millions of people who don't necessarily follow him, but they've read his book or something by him and received a great uplift and inspiration. This is a tremendous God-man. A tremendous God-man. When Lari Mahasaya said that he would be like a great steam locomotive carrying loads of cars of people toward God. How right he was. How right he was. We should get down on our knees every single day and thank God and the Masters that we have this path. That the way has been made easy in comparison to what some of these great Masters like Mother and Master, like Papa and Mataji, had to go through. We will not have to go through such difficulties as they did, but we still have to make the effort. Now, in order to realize this light of lights, we have to go beyond everything that we would think of as the mind, because the mind thinks of symbols. And so, if we have favorite deities or images of God, we can start out with that. That's all right. It helps us to focus. It helps us to be devotional. I love many of the different images of God. And even now I do, but I see them simply as a mask that God wears. It is not the final reality by any means at all. God is so much beyond your ability to conceive in the mind that it's almost worthless trying to conceive of what God is. Whatever he is, whatever you try to imagine him to be, there will be a huge gulf of difference between your conception and the reality. And yet we have to start someplace. And if we have the human mind to work with, then that's what we start with. And so we read and we try to understand and we try to incorporate. But there is nothing that will replace our practice of really going into the temple of your own being, entering into the silence there, and having the inward worlds revealed to you. And you'll go through many things. There are some who like to stay focused on the level of angels and of different beings on different spheres of existence. And it's not that these things don't exist. They do. And many of them are very, very good. And when you're on the upward path, they can be very beneficial to begin to think about and focus on this. But eventually, we have to go past it. And when you are of a highly developed nature, and you are still focused on these kinds of images, you are retarding your progress. What before was a help is now a hindrance. And it's fascinating, and it's interesting, and it's beautiful, but it's a hindrance. It's now blocking your path because you're not going straight, as Mother used to say, to the president of the universe. You're not going directly to the top. You're meandering. And as it may be beneficial for another person, it is not beneficial for you. Ramakrishna, I love this story of Ramakrishna and Todapuri. I've told it before, but I think it's so instructive that it's good to tell again. Todapuri was a tremendous wandering saint in India. And of course, Ramakrishna was a tremendous saint living in Dakshineshwar, which is a temple, a Hindu temple by the Ganges. And one day, Todapuri showed up at this temple. And he observed Ramakrishna. And what he saw really impressed him. Here was a tremendous God-man. But he's completely focused, Ramakrishna was, on the Divine Mother. And he had visions of the Divine Mother. And he would speak to the Divine Mother. And he would go to the temple and he would worship the Divine Mother. Although he had been a priest. And I told Swami Satchidananda one time, it seems that being a saint almost disqualifies you from being a priest. Because as a priest, you have very strict protocol. And you're supposed to put sandal paste and milk and boiled rice and garlands of flour all on the image. And what you're doing is you're charging this image with the divine devotion that you're feeling as a priest and the purity that you feel. And then people can come to this image and they can get a charge back out of this temple image. And when true men and women of God worship an image, it becomes supercharged with this kind of power. And so Ramakrishna was in charge as a priest, his brother is a priest, and he is being trained as a priest. Well, they would come in after he was supposed to be worshiping in this way. Well, Ramakrishna was so absorbed into the Divine Mother, he couldn't tell whether the image of the Divine Mother was in the imaging he was worshiping or in himself. So he would put the sandal piece on himself sometimes, sometimes on the image. He'd pour milk on the image, sometimes he'd pour it on himself. He'd put the flowers on himself. Well, this is very disgusting in the sight of these priests because they were into the protocol, you know. They weren't into saints. They were into protocol. And he'd be laying there in samadhi in front of the image. Well, you don't lay there just haphazardly, but he would fall unconscious in this samadhi state. They would come along and start kicking him, trying to get him to move. Wake up, fellow. What are you doing sleeping here? This is improper. They didn't understand. They didn't see. But Totapuri saw what a tremendous man he was, what a tremendous God-man he was. But that he seemed to be stuck on this image of the Divine Mother. So one night, Totapuri took it upon himself to say, I'm going to initiate you into the samadhi state of absolute absorption into God and go beyond images. So he sat down in a small hut with Ramakrishna. And he said, now I want you to concentrate here. And he put his thumb on his third eye point. On the ajna. Says, I want you to focus your whole attention there. What do you see? Ramakrishna says, oh, I see the Divine Mother. She's so beautiful, so beguiling. Oh, I just feel such love for her. Totapuri said, no, go beyond the Divine Mother. Focus here. Now what do you see? Oh, there's the Divine Mother again. Oh, isn't she so beautiful? Isn't she so lovely? And on he would go like that. Finally, Totapuri looked around. He saw there a small piece of broken glass. He picked up the broken glass. He jabbed it into his ajna. He said, now focus here. And instantly, Ramakrishna went into samadhi, into the light of lights beyond all creation. And he stayed there for 7 days. And Totapuri said, my God, he did in one sitting what it took me 20 years to accomplish. And when he came back down, he was completely absorbed in this inner absorption of the divine, of this light of lights, even though he was coming back down into human consciousness. And it took him a while to reorient himself to be able to operate in a body. Now the story doesn't stop there because Totapuri was able to enter in this divine absorption, but he didn't see the world as God. He had not gone into that final state that Papa talked about, the Sahaja Samadhi state. And he was feeling very distressed about this. And he knew that there was something more for him to go. Finally, he got a very bad case of a stomach illness. And he was so miserable. He said, what am I doing? He said, this world is just an illusion. God is the only reality. I might as well just destroy this body if it's going to be this way, because it's distracting me from being able to concentrate upon God. You see, he had not entered into that final state yet. And so, on a full moon night, he decided to drown himself, and he approached the Ganges and went down the bathing ghat where there are these steps, and he walked down the steps one at a time in calm determination. He was just going to walk out in the Ganges until he had drowned himself. Well, he walked toward the Ganges, and he just kept walking, and he kept walking. And finally he realized he was in the middle of the Ganges itself, and he hadn't gone into it at all. He was walking on the water. And he turned around, and he saw the temple of Dakshineswar there, and suddenly it was as if the scales dropped off his eyes. And he saw this moon-drenched temple, the river sparkling all around him. Everywhere he looked, he saw the divinity shining and manifesting in everything that he saw. Through that experience, he had transcended and gone beyond into the universal vision. Now, his habit was, he was a wandering sadhu. He would never spend more than 3 days in any location, yet he had spent months here at Dakshineswar. And the next morning, he gave his pranams to Ramakrishna, and he continued on his way in his wandering lifestyle. It is no small thing to go beyond all form, all image, all thought, and yet it is what we are called upon to do. Now, if we didn't have a big challenge in front of us, we wouldn't think there is much to do. So we got a big challenge. We got the biggest challenge there is. The biggest challenge you could imagine. But it's a wonderful challenge. It's a wonderful thing to still the mind, to go on the quietness. It's not as far away from you as you think it might be. It is the silence in between your outgoing breath and your incoming breath. And it is the silence between your incoming breath and your outgoing breath. You rest at every breath that you have. You enter into a little, small, still state each time. And when you are able to consciously direct the mind so that you can bring it into that full attention, one-mindedness, you will, even for a few split seconds, you will enter into that tremendous stillness. You will enter into that light of lights. And you will have that experience, and then you will enter into it more and more until you become established in that. Now, that does not mean you cease to exist. It is the source of all existence, and it is the source of all freedom. When you have established yourself in that light of light, you are free now. You are no longer curbed in by all the different obstructions of your own mind. Now, your outer life may look very much the same, but inwardly you have been transformed and changed. And this light of light, this beyond creation, is God the Father. God the Father. And so on this Father's Day, as we honor all those who have participated in the perpetuation of life and bringing new life into this world, we also honor God the Father. Now, in India, there are very few temples, very few, one or two perhaps, that are dedicated to Brahman. Because there is no image, there is no concept. It would just be an empty hall, I guess. And yet, the tremendous experience that can come through this is beyond your imagining at this current point, but it is tremendous. It is tremendous. Make the effort. Put the mind onto positive things. Bring it into attunement and alignment with the light within you. Focus on the breath and bring it to a standstill. and you will enter into the supremely blissful, peaceful, beautiful state. And then everything of form and image will seem almost garish in comparison to the prime simplicity and beauty of the supreme state of Brahman, the Sat, or even beyond Sat, as it says in the Upanishads. Beyond Sat and Asat, beyond existence and non-existence, because it transcends all notions, all thoughts of that nature. Feel that that's dwelling in you even now. There's a silent place inside of you where you can visit that supreme state of consciousness. And when you still yourself and become quiet, you will know what I'm speaking of. Kate, would you lead us in some chants, please?
Jai Ram, 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 Jai Ram,
Please pray with me. O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, I feel the wonder and the beauty of Thy glorious presence in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for Thee. I kneel in adoration at Thy feet and surrender myself to Thee. I feel the power of Thy perfection surging in every cell of my body. My mind and my intelligence are radiant with Thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss of my communion with Thee. I and my Father are one. Blessed Spirit, I am He.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
To the light of lights within you each.